This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. This is November 30th, 2012, and we do local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. My name is Jay Koronek, and I'm here with our WHFR News Director, Dennis Reimars. Hello, Dennis. How are you feeling?
I feel fantastic. How are you?
Okay. Our listeners who didn't hear me mention your condition in the last 2 hours should know that you're feeling much better. So Michigan weather, yeah, you got to prepare for the colds, the flu, any way that's recommended. I could tell you some things, but hey, it's kind of subjective. I'm not a doctor, but I did suggest earlier, wash your hands a lot, believe it or not.
The best, there was an old family remedy for the common cold, which it kind of freaks me out that nobody's ever really tried this before. But apparently you take some tea, and then in a separate container, not within the tea, but you have some chicken soup, and then you get plenty of rest and plenty of fluids, and then a week later you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Of course, the joke is if you took none of those things a week later, you'd probably be fine, but it works for us.
Yeah, remember, all opinions on the show are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College.
That's right.
Okay. Looking at the Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday, I don't know if we have too many comments to make, but it's also the headline story in the Dearborn Times-Herald, so I guess it's important. Dearborn has terminated the lease at Mystic Creek. That's a golf course out by Camp Dearborn, and they're going to either run it themselves or let somebody else run it for them. So it's all towards making more profit and further developing the area, and of course some proposals were already made by outside consultants to the city of Dearborn, the city council, in the last month that we've mentioned before about perhaps marketing that area a little better so that people would know it's not just for Dearborn residents, that other people can come in there and enjoy the facilities. So maybe they should rename it so it doesn't seem like it's only a camp for Dearborn. Maybe that would get the idea across a little better. But, you know, I've never seen, even locally, I guess, in Dearborn, it's obvious that we already know about Camp Dearborn, but even in Dearborn, I think it could be promoted a little better and made clear what's going on. I don't remember getting too many mailings about it. Maybe there was something in the brochure for the Performing Arts Center.
There definitely is.
There's not that much mention there.
But you know what else? And I remember the last mailing, and it was, actually, you're right, it's been quite a while, but it came in the spring a couple years ago. And it gave a nice rent. They've added more of the cabins that are out there because mm-hmm. you know you don't have to bring your own recreational vehicle. They have mm-hmm. cabins there, and they had a whole run. They had photos, and it was kind of cool actually. And it was cool enough that we actually went out shortly afterward and checked it out. It was, I don't know. I'm a day person. I stay the night there.
I haven't been out there for a while. How far is it? Does it drive? About 45 minutes?
About 45 minutes. Yes.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
No. In fact, it seems like it takes longer once you get off 96 and get, you know, on the regular roads.
I know some of our listeners, very active in Dearborn issues, say, we should just sell the place, sell it. Well, we can't really sell it because it's not, authorized to be sold like for commercial development. And that's up to the city of Milford. And Milford has been resistant to change the zoning. That's the word,
yes.
The zoning for that area. And so to keep it in the sort of nonprofit recreational now, that's no good because the people that want to buy it either want to develop it for private profit, like either homes, condominiums, or some sort of shopping mall or whatever. And I'm sure that the property is quite valuable if it was zoned that way. And we have no control in the city of Dearborn. We can make requests, but they don't have to do it that way. Apparently, a lot of nearby residents don't want it made commercial, and they don't want more building on it. Although you'd think the city of Milford would like more taxes paid to them by that kind of development.
That is always confusing.
Because we mustn't be paying as many taxes as what a major commercial development would. But that's just for those people who think we should just sell it. There are several proposals to make it profitable. I think it's almost profitable each year the way it's going now, mm-hmm. and new things are planned. And I think with more marketing and the other suggestions I have, it will actually be a profit-making situation. And, of course, people in Dearborn can take benefit from it. Do we get a lower admission charge?
Yes, I think so. It's four bucks for residents. Well, okay. I haven't gone in a couple of years, but it was four bucks.
So it is less if you can show Dearborn residency. So you do get sort of a break on that, like you do as a Dearborn resident attending Henry Ford Community College. You get significantly, I think it's 40% reduced tuition. So anyway, that's the headline stories for the Pressing Guide and Times Herald from this last week. I did want to say it was in Times Herald and also Pressing Guide. Public Service Days end today, Friday in Dearborn. That's the day, supposedly, that your trash is picked up. Once a month, they will also come by and do something else for your streets. Sweep the streets or right. some other kind of maintenance. And so those public service days, the reason I mention that is because you would have to have your car off the street for public service days. And so that necessity is ending today. However, according to the story, let me just grab that.
You got it? Yeah. All right.
People are always in Dearborn saying, well, when did they pick up the leaves again? In some areas... And this could just be a rumor, but I got it from a good source, that the leaves on in front of Mayor O'Reilly's house, and he's in West Dearborn, have actually been picked up by Dearborn crews four times since leaf pickup has started. It's only supposed to be twice. It's not just his house, but that whole street, which is a major thoroughfare there.
Sure.
So it's a little more than the side streets. A lot of people go up and down. I won't mention the name of the street. So I think it's a little unfair because you don't want a lot of leaves blowing around on a heavily traveled street because with rain, which is supposed to happen today, they get kind of slippery for the cars. It's hard to stop as fast, not just because there's water there, but because the leaves make it even much more slippery, almost like trying to stop on ice. Nonetheless, it says here, the collection of loose leaves raked into the streets continues until December 7th. So having parked vehicles off the street as crews do their work is helpful, by the way, according to Jim Murray, director of Dearborn Public Department of Public Works. Another day to remember is Dearborn 14th. If you're a Dearborn resident, that is when the city will stop its, and again, this is the 7th is a week from today, week from November 30th, Friday, and the other day to remember is December 14th. That's when the city will stop its seasonal collection of yard waste, that's even leaves, put in proper containers, which is either the big plastic trash barrels or the paper bags on trash day.
I guess the theory is that normally by the middle of December, everything that's going to fall has fallen, and usually we have snow by the middle of December.
Yeah, it's hard to do yard work for even cleanup in your yard when it gets so cold and maybe snowy. We don't know when the snow will start to fly here seriously yet, but so that's where it is. And if you want to mark it on your calendar, the curbside yard waste collection, that is from the proper containers, will resume again in the week of March 18th, 2013.
Cool.
So that's our public service announcement for the city. An ad in both Wednesday papers of this week, the Times Herald and the Press and Guide, it is an ad for a nonprofit. Our fire department in Dearborn, Santa is coming to the fire safety house. Yes, he is. This is a big deal, and it is free. The fire safety house is where our Dearborn fire people practice and train themselves for various fire prevention as well as firefighting techniques, and it is opened, I know, once a year for this purpose. Let me look at it. It's page 8A of the Press and Guide. I'll get there. Hang on. This is the only news show on the air, the only radio news show where you can hear the pages turning.
Yeah, everybody else uses computers and
right.
tablets.
No, heck with them, yeah. I'll get the right edition here, too.
Sometimes I'll hear somebody pressing on their iPad too hard.
Mm-hmm.
All right, probably not really, but...
Give me a break here.
All right. No?
Well, where is it? Page 8A? I don't see it now. Okay.
All right.
Oh, it's a Times Herald. Okay. Too many papers here.
We do.
No, I'm glad we have all these papers. We'll talk about the papers briefly. Here it is. Again, look up the article or go to City of Dearborn website for the Dearborn Fire Department. But today, Friday, November 20th, and tomorrow, Saturday, December 1st, from 6 to 8 p.m., you know, Santa only comes out at night. So
that's right.
Any of these other Santas you see at shopping centers during the day, they're not the real ones. No,
no.
Santa only comes out at night, and to the fire safety house here in Dearborn. Now, it's on Outer Drive, next to station, fire station number 2. That's just north of Michigan Avenue.
Across from Dearborn High.
Yeah, across from Dearborn High, almost across. And get this, besides Santa Claus being there, both nights arriving at 6 p.m. on a fire ladder truck.
Wow.
He's probably got that big seat at the back, you know, where you steer the rear. That would be the place I would choose if I wanted to be seen. Anyway, you can enjoy cookies, hot chocolate, balloons, coloring books, a tour of the firehouse itself. They're going to let you climb on fire trucks.
Okay.
That doesn't seem safe.
No.
But they're actually going.
Hopefully, they're not moving.
Probably there'll be some nets there to catch you when you fall.
Yeah,
you know, fire department has those nets, you know, for the jumpers. And you can get a picture with Santa. Now, everything is free. So how cool is that?
Really?
Right?
Cool.
So donations are accepted, because this is going to cost money. But what a great service. I know they did this last year, maybe the year before, too. So Santa is coming to the Dearborn Fire Safety House. That's, if you got to know the street address for your GPS, 19750 Outer Drive, next to station number 2. That's Outer Drive, just north of Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn area. Tonight and tomorrow night from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Santa arriving 6 p.m. Sounds like a lot of fun. For the kids. I know in my neighborhood, and it hasn't been announced yet, but we always have Santa Claus, our neighborhood association pulls him in. But probably not tonight because he's busy, right?
Oh, absolutely. And,
you know, but so sometime in the near future, he's going to be in my neighborhood. And they actually get one of the, at least in the past, they had all one of the old Dearborn trolley vehicles that George Duraney started with, mm-hmm. this Dearborn trolley special service on special days and occasions. And we had Santa in a trolley at the back of the trolley, and it would stop every street corner or so in our neighborhood for 15 minutes. And the kids closest by would just line up on that corner
ring
and then go in
something.
And they go into the trolley and tell Santa what they wanted. And
then
they get pushed off and and they go on to the next stop. So that was a photo op in our neighbor. I don't know if that any other neighborhood association does that.
I've not heard of that. Do you have carolers?
Spring Wells Park.
In your neighborhood?
You don't hear people
outside and you go and you give them money? No?
No. I'm sure each neighborhood association has their own traditions on that.
Yeah.
And that's all also nice and cool and so on.
As long as they can sing well.
We have actually, believe it or not, exhausted the hard news, as I see it anyway, from the Dearborn Times-Herald.
But we're not doing a short show.
Guide. No. We have a lot of stories, late-breaking stories, that you can only catch from dearborn.patch.com. Dennis, why don't you begin with one of the big ones about our legislature. We do have the word in to have a visit from George Duraney as soon as the so-called lame duck session in our Michigan legislature is concluded, to come on the Journal and give a report about what's finally happened there, last minute update. But that's still going on. Lame duck because, well, it's still the same people who might not be in office in January who are still there as our representatives and senators. Either they were term limited and will be leaving, or they lost the election for their seat, and it's only, of course, representatives. George Duraney did win his reelection from the Dearborn area, so he'll be back in January, but he's our representative there now, and will give us a direct report. But
From MLive, sure.
What you're saying,
because anything that doesn't pass in this last session, the Republicans retain control of both houses, so they can just approve it when they reconvene. So
they have a governor to sign it if he chooses to do so, as he usually would.
Well, I read this guy a lot, Jonathan Oosting, O-O-S-T-I-N-G, and he does, like you said, he writes for MLive, and he did this wonderful little, he calls it the Michigan Lame Duck Chronicles, and some of the topics that are covered. And if you'd like more on the story, it came out this morning at 10:03, right on MLive.com. But anyway, there's a synopsis of each thing, and then it goes into detail if you click the link. But he was talking about right to work and how Michigan union members crowded Capitol the Capitol halls to lobby against the right to work. And that was, Mr. Oosting said, it was the biggest news of the week is what didn't happen. Lawmakers did not take up the controversial right to work legislation, but that doesn't mean they won't. Governor Rick Snyder met with Senate Majority Leader Randy Richardville and House Speaker Jace Bolger on Thursday, and they're trying to figure out how to proceed as union members are seriously protesting this. And that is, again, the right to work. And as far as education reform, the Republican-led Education Committee has heard testimony this week on plans to expand the state-run reform district to include more low-performing schools. Very controversial as well. Senator Phil Pavlov said the state must step in and take the real bold reform to help students in the failing schools, but he also said, quote, that those reforms might not be finalized during the lame duck session. And really that, Jay, that is the common theme through all these things. Mm-hmm. They have no idea what will be done. The Obamacare Health Exchange, this is something I wanted to talk to you about. Mm-hmm. It says here the Republican-controlled House Committee on Thursday failed to pass legislation authorizing a state based marketplace for health insurance. Is that not something that the federal government is trying to set up, but each state makes the choice of whether they want to have that so-called marketplace?
Yeah, if they want to administer it and have more of a say, if the state chooses to not be involved in the sort of in the health exchange of their own, then the federal government is just going to do it. And it's interesting that both Governor Snyder has said we should do it ourselves. So he's in favor of that. And I understand, you just mentioned Majority Leader Senator Bolger, mm-hmm. a Republican, that he's in favor. Now, he's been harshly criticized for this position from conservative Michigan groups, and I mean really conservative Michigan groups. I get some of their emails just to keep in touch, as if he's a sellout, that he's supporting Obama and blah, blah, blah. Well, it's interesting, not criticizing Governor Snyder for the same point of view. And I think, again, if you want to keep state control over it, you ought to administer it. But they think that sends the wrong message, I assume. That's all I can assume. I don't know how the conservative groups can say no to local control of something that's going to happen anyway by the federal government.
But isn't this a way for them to try to delay it? Is this a tactic?
No. Well, won't delay it much. The federal government just go ahead and set up an exchange, and they'll manage it totally for the state of Michigan, for those in the next stage, and there's a phase in for the next couple of years of Obamacare. So I think it's just a token symbolic resistance, which I thought we were maybe should be done with after the last election, clearly showed that the majority of people in the United States do want this policy. If they didn't want improved health care and the reforms that so-called Obamacare has, that's part and parcel of what's going on there, they wouldn't have voted for Obama. They wouldn't have voted for more Democrats to be in the House and the Senate nationally and in the governor seats. So I think the election, which was okay, only about 4 or 5 percentage points the difference for Obama over Romney, but also in the other election races that I've just mentioned across the country, it's quite clear that a majority of voters, that you know, democracy we have here, said, we want to go in these directions. And, of course, symbolically, over the last 4 years, they've been fighting Obama and all of the Democratic Party initiatives that a majority of people in the U.S. now clearly have voted to say we're in favor of. Okay, the minority doesn't agree, but then again, it's a democracy. So I have to agree with Governor Snyder. It's my humble opinion that he and now Senator Bolger, who has had his problems in the last couple of years as the Senate Majority Leader and often disagreed even with the governor, they're trying to make it something that Michigan does approve of. I'm not sure if there's a deadline on when we have to say.
Well, that was my next question because of the
health exchange, Michigan done or not? Because in January there will be a few more Democrats in the House, although all the committees again will still be controlled by the Republicans, and so will the legislature. So in Michigan. So who knows what's going to happen on that? I think it's just absolutely foolish for conservatives to say that they represent the people of Michigan. Maybe they represent their district in Ishpeming, in the up UP or something. That's the opinion up there. But it doesn't make sense for the state not to take control of the health exchange program locally. If you're a conservative and you got two choices, well, either local control or let the federal government do it, well, I think you'd want to have that local input and local control.
Well, and the way the article is worded, exactly what it says is that since this legislation failed to pass, it means that Michigan residents who need to shop for a policy will do so through an exchange run by the federal government. It makes it sound like that's already a done deal,
maybe,
and that can't be
maybe
changed.
Maybe it's a done deal. I've been keeping up the last couple of days. I thought it was still on the table somehow, yeah, but maybe it's gone.
And so, as you said, Mr. Bulger appears to be softening to the idea. That's how it's worded here.
Well, that's
a diplomatic way of putting it, but he was hardcore against it. Do you know that there could be hunting season in Michigan's Upper Peninsula for the once endangered gray wolf? I know you're so anti-hunting.
I'm sorry for the gray wolf, but wolves, let me speak as an environmentalist here, have gotten a bad rap over the years. And yes, I know that sometimes they're predators, and yes, they can be dangerous when cornered.
So don't corner them.
If you don't understand the wolf and the wolf's lifestyle, it's not like a shark, folks. They're not just violent, vicious predators. They are family animals. They have tight-knit families. They take care of their own. They do not over-pilfer areas. Some farmers would disagree with me who have livestock. But is there an overpopulation? That may or may not be true in some areas. But just to allow all wolves to be killed, whether they're gray or not, is not good management, I don't think. I mean, we do have what's left of an environmental and a conservation authority in the state of Michigan. They've been pretty much disbanded and underfunded, so I'm not sure if this is just a bunch of hunters that said, hey, we wanted something else to shoot at, mostly Republicans would say go for it without looking at the environmental cost and the actual nature of the species that we're trying to terminate, or at least reduce the numbers of significantly.
Well, I'm going to put a positive on this after you say, of course I will. Jay's shaking his head. The fact that it is being considered they're going to have a hunting season for it after it was once endangered means that they've recovered so many. That's a positive thing. In my environmental classes, these endangered species lists, they're very important and they're enforced severely. I mean, it's so, and obviously it works. So, all right, we'll move on. Mm-hmm. Blue Cross plans to convert Blue Cross from a charitable trust to a nonprofit mutual, continued this week. And there's a lot of behind the scenes and discussions. What else? Concealed handguns. The Senate on Thursday approved changes to state law that would eliminate county licensing boards. That's interesting. By shifting their duties to sheriffs and allow holders with advanced training to carry concealed in so-called gun-free zones, such as schools and churches. Interesting. The bill now says
that's a controversial part.
Big time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other states have, done concealed carry with certain areas where you can't do it, and have actually had reduction in crime. I would like to believe that no one needs to carry personal protection that violent and that deadly, but at least concealed carry in Michigan requires training and instruction on how to fire the weapon and also the legality of when and where it should be used. So you actually get some decent instruction. To me, it's the crime is not in concealed carry, but in Michigan, I mean, the problem is the legislation we really need is required instruction and training and supervision, like we have for driver education, for people to even get a gun permit. And I'm talking about rifles as well as handguns. I think these are dangerous weapons. The car is a dangerous weapon. Yes, you need significant hours of training and instruction, and you need to know the laws of the state of Michigan on proper use of cars. That needs to be expanded and added to the licensing procedure on every gun purchase in Michigan. This is not restricting gun purchase. Mm-mm. That's not what I'm saying. I believe in the Second Amendment in all of its permutations. And concealed carry, I think, can be fine. But let's get the proper instruction and licensing and in place for people that want to do that. I'm always afraid of people who can buy guns, and they need to get a federal permit that they can fill out at the store now. There is a federal license that you have to fill out the forms for and get approved for before you buy at least handguns, and I think even rifles now, too. Like at Cabela's or any gun store, they all have to have the same permit filled out. We have stopped the duplication of permits in Michigan. That federal permit seems to be the thing to do. So we stopped that. But these changes, we'll see where it goes. Again, well, Republicans have the majority. They're much influenced by the National Rifle Association positions. So they could even allow concealed carry on college campus, elementary schools. I don't think the kids should have those guns. No. But we'll see where it goes. The lame duck session is scary. But I think some of these laws can be reversed, if necessary, by the people that come in January.
Right, right. That's the point. And I'm sure we've all read the same studies that some of the countries that have the laws that where people can use guns and it's very, you know, it's prevalent, they also have the highest training requirements. In mm-hmm. other words, that people have to know how to use them. And I think the theory is if you're a bad guy and you know somebody probably has a gun, and you know they know how to use it, that's a deterrent, I would think.
Yeah, and I think everybody's in favor of properly enforcing the gun laws that we have now.
Sure.
And that hasn't been done as much as maybe it needs to be.
But as you said, the first part of it, they're just taking the licensing from the boards and shifting it to the sheriff's mm-hmm. duties, and yeah. that makes sense financially. Mm-hmm. All right, and then the last, what do we got here?
In the back of that side.
The new business tax plan. Mm-hmm. A revised proposal before the House Tax Policy Committee would eliminate the state's personal property tax and replace funding to local communities, in part by diverting a portion of the state's use tax to a special authority. Basically, if approved by the legislature, residents would need to approve diverting those funds to the authority via whatever. The use tax is, how is that different from the regular sales tax? We don't know. I just know that when I do my taxes, it asks me if I buy things from out of state online, and if so, I have to pay a use tax. So maybe that's what it is. If you're not in the state, does that make sense to you? You don't know.
I don't. He's looking at me, and I'm just.
I know it's kind of fun.
Got my mouth open here.
Yeah, I don't know, Dennis.
I know their proposal to try to that Governor Snyder even wanted to do something about corporate property tax, and to change that way. But you can't really eliminate now. They say personal property tax. That's the things. It's personal property, but it's not your property. Is that the clarification here? Personal property is things like cars and the stuff you put in your house.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know we paid taxes on that, maybe just generically. Obviously, property taxes are pretty essential. Of course, they're pretty low right now because property values are down. And it's not a good way to fund government. We've talked on this show about replacing property taxes and income tax, I believe, with the so-called fair tax. And that would be a consumption tax, which means the things that you buy, like personal property, but even if you buy a car or buy a house or,
long as it's new.
Yeah, as long as it's new, you have to pay. In Michigan, they would change the, sort of do away with the old so-called sales tax and increase it to only like 3.5% more. And they at least could do away with the individual income tax. And I believe they can also do away with property tax and go to that. So those people that buy and buy more, they would have to pay more per sale. And I think that makes us a little wiser every time we buy something rather than this rampant materialism. But we don't have to have any withholding and pay any income tax at the end of the year. And so plus there would be in the fair tax proposals nationally and statewide, everybody would get prebate checks. So you say the poorer people, they have to pay more on their food and their, the basics of life. Yes, but every month they will get checks that pay them back up to so-called, the high end of the poverty level, which is, I think, $40,000 for a family of four. So everybody gets those checks to pay for the basic essentials up to that level of income. So there's a number of very interesting reforms. They do seem like big changes. I don't want to say radical, because fair tax has been investigated, and there's been test studies for more than 20 years, both nationally and locally. I think it would work. I think it's worth a try. Nobody's actually tried it yet. Although you hear rumors in terms of the so-called fiscal cliff, the automatic cutbacks at the end of the year that the federal government is under the gun for right now. Why not have a consumption tax? Canada has this consumption tax. They call it GST, General Sales Tax. It's added on top of everything else to raise money across the whole country. Whenever you buy anything anywhere in Canada, you pay a GST on top of any provincial, they don't have states, you know, provincial right. sales tax or even city sales tax. Like in Toronto, just like New York, you have city, you have state tax, then the GST would be added to every purchase nationwide. But there's no prebate. So even the poor people are stuck with more taxes on most everything with that. So I don't think they should go to this kind of thing. It should be the fair tax at least. And let's totally get rid of the income tax issue and all the crazy deductions and loopholes. They say, well, we're going to close some of those loopholes. Why not close them all? The way you do it is get rid of the income tax. And that just cleans the deck right there. So I believe in clean and simple, get rid of the 75,000 pages, yes, of tax code that almost nobody's ever read or understood except a few tax lawyers for only the biggest companies. Get rid of the offshore loopholes and the secret bank account loopholes. Get rid of all of it by simply going to a fair tax, which is, yes, a consumption tax. And property tax is not necessarily fair, although, yes, somebody that can buy a bigger amount of property, maybe you should pay for it up front by that extra tax instead of property taxes per year as a way to support the state. I don't know. No one's really been looking at the larger picture, looking at all this little tweaking. Well, the system we have is so full of tweaks now that it's almost tweaked out. You know, it's almost dysfunctional, and nobody can understand it, which means I think nobody can respect it in the morning or on April 15th. That's the most significant time. So let's see what happens. Again, you don't never know. Some crazy things can happen in a lame duck session. The question is, will Governor Snyder approve of it just because the majority of the legislature, his Republicans, if you will, have endorsed it?
Well, you know, and the last thing we'll talk about is they finally, and this is after decades long, they finally got approval for the Mass Transit Authority. So they're talking about high-speed buses through all the, I mean, we're talking from Macomb to Wayne to Oakland to Washtenaw, and they're going to, can all happen now because of the one authority. Mm-hmm. So I think it's interesting that we never had that before.
We need that. We've said here on this show and all the urban political science scholars of the country for 40 years have said you need to treat these large metropolitan areas as one, and something like, you know, transportation, you need to have those decisions be made as one group. Of course, everybody has a stake in it. Everybody has a couple of people on the commission, no doubt. That's, you know, so Oakland, Macomb, Wayne County, individual cities, they'll all have their representatives. And I always wonder, is that too big a committee? Can anything really get done?
Right.
But there's got to be an executive committee or executor that will finally make some hard decisions for that group. It's going to take some while to get that rolling and to get them into a functional mode. You know, they meet each other, they know each other, they know the system, and they can start making things happen. But it has to be at that level.
And it's started up because of this approval. That means it can actually start.
Yeah, and this will help the city of Detroit, as well as Dearborn and the other areas, actually get some public transportation that actually means something, I hope. I wanted to switch we need to switch to, there's only one commentary from Jim Hightower today, and let's take a listen.
Sorry, we're closed. In one of the saddest signs of the times, this message is popping up all across the country as governors and legislators are cutting off funds and shutting off access to one of the finest, most popular assets owned by the people of our country, state parks. More than 6,600 of these jewels draw some 700 million visitors a year to their grand vistas, historic sites, wildlife, campgrounds, educational centers, and lodges. Parks are literally a tangible expression of America's democratic ideals, common ground for every man, woman, and child to enjoy and experience. For the middle class and the poor, who can't jet off to luxury resorts for a getaway or vacation, these spaces offer a form of real wealth, something that each of us literally owns, knitting us together as a community and a nation. Yet, too many spiritually shriveled, small-minded, and short-sighted state officials are snuffing out this uniting social force, stupidly treating parks as nothing but a budget number, or worse, a piece of the nanny state to be axed in the name of ideological purity. Top politicos in most states are closing many of their parks, slashing hours and services at others, or simply handing over the public's asset to profiteering corporations. Idaho's governor has proposed eliminating the entire parks department. California shut the gates of a fourth of the state's parks last year. Officials in Arizona and Florida intend to privatize their parks. Washington State has cut off most of its park funding, and Ohio has okayed oil drilling in its parks to replace state financing. This is Jim Hightower saying, as Woody Guthrie said of outlaws, some will rob you with a six-gun, some with a fountain pen. Shutting parks is theft by the in-laws, the political insiders who are stealing the people's property, stealing from America itself.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Our public parks, that's an issue, too. We were mentioning improving regional authority for transportation. And, you know, the state of Michigan wanted to extend its control of parks to the park in Detroit. Oh, Jesus. Belle Isle.
Belle Isle Park?
Yeah. Of course, then they would start requiring an entrance fee. And the city of Detroit, in its wisdom, the city council, said no to it. No to it. No, we don't want the state running our park. They would pay for the cost. They would upgrade it. They would make it really nice. Yes, people in Detroit and people around the state would have to pay for admission every time they go across the little bridge. But that's ideal. That means all the parks would be under state control and managed by people that know how to. And the improvements. The city of Detroit can't do the improvements. Well, just because I mentioned Detroit here a couple times, you take a listen. We happen to have this via CNN. This is a brief interview, brief segment of the interview that Detroit Mayor Dave Bing. You say, well, Detroit is not Dearborn. They're right next door, folks. Okay, all Detroit issues are our issues, really. The consequences are significant.
We drink their water.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay, so here's some comments from Detroit Mayor Dave Bing about how he's got the second hardest job in the U.S. We assume the first hardest is president.
But he never says.
I don't think it's Governor Snyder's job. But okay. Dave Bing.
The ones who inspire us.
Ah, there's going to be a PSA first.
The ones who make us laugh.
I can't skip it. Sorry, folks.
The ones with the strong shoulder to lean on. The ones we're named after. And the ones named after us. It takes all kinds of good to make a family. At New York Life, everything we do...
Well, that's a commercial, so shame on them. But that's CNN for you. Got to make a buck here. Here comes Mayor Bing.
I'm Dave Bing, the mayor of the city of Detroit. And I know the reason that I took this position is to make the hard decision so that this city would have a future. But it's probably the second most difficult job in this country behind the president. I believe people feel the mayor in a particular city can solve all of the problems, and that's not really true. That probably is the most difficult thing I've had to deal with, just managing expectations. We are in an environment, I think, of entitlement. We've got a lot of people who are city workers who for years and years, 20, 30 years, think they're entitled to a job and all that comes with it. Nobody wants to go backwards. But in order for us to move this city forward, we're going to have to take a step or two backwards And then I think all of us have to participate in the pain that's upon us right now. From Washington, D.C., born and raised, went on to Syracuse University on an athletic scholarship, and was drafted as the second person in 1966 at the college draft, selected by the Detroit Pistons as their number one draft choice. It was a booming, thriving city. It was the automotive capital of the world. I mean, dominated by the big three, you know, General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler. You know, Motown was still here when I got here, so that was very big. Over time, things started to change. Motown left the city. The automotive industry started to go down. It went backwards for a while, all the way to the point where two of our major companies went bankrupt. And we lost our population. Our population, when I first got here, was 1.3, 1.4 million. We're now about 700,000 people. And so you've got a city that has 138, 139 square miles that you could fit Manhattan, Boston, and San Francisco in. And now we have 700,000 people. So we got all of this infrastructure and all of this overhead and all of this cost without the revenue to give the people the services. I don't think Detroit's going to be what it was. We got to look at ourselves differently. I don't know that we're going to be the same blue-collar town that we were, that we were known for. 10 years from now, if you were to come to Detroit, what you would see that you don't see now is a completely renovated riverfront. I think our downtown will be very strong. I think our midtown would be very strong. And we would see people that are living out in, you know, in a neighborhood where there's only one or two homes. We're not going to see that, because we're going to try to convince those people that they need to move so that there's density in all of our neighborhoods, so that we can really look out for each other, we can help protect each other, so that we can bring people and families back together again like it used to be.
Sounds like he's trying to do a positive job there. Second most difficult job. I was amazed that the 139 square miles we have, it would fit New York, Boston, and San Francisco?
San Francisco, yeah.
All within those city limits. So that's why my idea from 10 years ago about when Katrina hit New Orleans, we should just relocate New Orleans to Detroit. We've got plenty of open space here.
We do.
We could have put all those people here in a few other cities, too, on top of it. I know there was a plan that people have been working on to have large, large farming operations go on to actually clear huge areas and make city, community farms, maybe,
sure.
Or at least farms. I mean, make it productive land rather than all this devastation and open space. Obviously, the city with only 700,000 people left living in it has severe budget problems. Obviously, the land's not worth too much, so not getting much property tax from it either at this point. What hurt most, and has been on all the media, I'm sure you've heard that at the beginning of that clip on other commercial media, is the fact that just because you've had a job for 20 or 30 years doesn't mean you deserve
just to keep working.
Anything more, either right. To keep working or the entitlements, he said. People think they're entitled. Well, no, if there's no need for your job, if because of city services don't need you, I'm sure they really do. It's just they don't have the money to pay you. I'm concerned about the commitments you make to pensions, to retirement, and health insurance. If you make those commitments, I think you have to stick behind them as best possible. So I'm not sure what the answers are for the city of Detroit. I think they're going to have to go to emergency management from the state somehow. That's all in the air still because
sure.
of the last election changing the kind of emergency financial manager that Detroit can have. And so it's a big deal. But kind of an important comment from Mayor Dave Bing there about his situation. And
you know what I heard out of the entitlement part that you just referred to was that just because you've had a job for 20 or 30 years, you just can't sit back and assume you'll have it. You have to continue working hard. Not that the job won't necessarily be there, but you have to, if you don't work at it and be successful, somebody else can. I don't know. That's what I got out of it.
Well, certainly people that aren't productive can't be maintained just because they've been there.
But that happens a lot.
There has to be, standards for job maintenance.
Well, I heard an ill-informed person say that they were glad Proposal 2 failed, statewide proposal regarding collective bargaining, because now the people that just have a job because they're in a union won't be able to do that anymore.
Yeah,
and I thought, the unions, they're, I mean, sure, you have, it's a different setup to protect the worker, the employee, but they're still required to perform. So I don't know. That's
right.
A lot of misinformed people.
People don't know. I'm from the inside of unions, folks. You don't know that unions are very concerned about quality people keeping their jobs and getting the people who are not qualified, not doing the job, not meeting expectations, out. And this is true for teachers. I thought teachers get their job for life, no matter what they do. No. There was that assumption. And as I mentioned, even here at Henry Ford Community College, it was my union, the American Association. We're part of the UAW, but our AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, are we part of the AFT? Yes, UAW. Yeah, I think our union is. But in any event, the American, how soon we forget now,
yeah,
that I'm not full time anymore. But the American Federation of Teachers here, Local 1650. Was one of the first, maybe in the country, to actually take over the criteria and the standards for judging teachers, even tenured teachers, getting help, getting improvement for those that are not performing well, and actually setting up a procedure for getting rid of people that have, let's say, severe problems that prevent them from teaching, and get them help. So it's done. Unions help allow this to happen in the most fair and legal way, in the most public way. It's not hidden. It's not personal preference of some private corporation boss. Well, I don't like the way they look. You're out of here. And you say, well, it's a private company. They get to do what they want. I think up to a point. Obviously, there's rules against harassment and unfair judgments about firing, even in private companies, I believe. I hope so. But certainly in these public, like city jobs, there has to be criteria to either help people do a better job, to get their attention to do a better job, and to take their jobs away if they're not performing. So in terms of performance criteria, I think most unions are very aware of that, and they're very concerned about it, and they don't negotiate against that. That's definitely a misconception that's been going on for decades.
So you've heard that too, and I think the people that say that are usually looking at it saying, well, the one who has the most seniority keeps the job. The new guy, even if he's better, will get let go because he doesn't have seniority. And to a degree, that is part of it.
Well, the state of Michigan took care of that in terms of teachers, so
sure.
Seniority doesn't play a part now by state edict.
But in other industries...
I'm sorry to say that the principal, at least in my daughter's school district, they decide who's going to stay and who's going to go, who's going to be... I don't know that there's any procedure about it anymore, but that's thanks to, I think, a very unfair law of the state of Michigan, is that the administration doesn't have to respect seniority anymore, and they can just pick and choose who's going to continue and who's not. And I think they need to prove that those that they're not having back, they need to prove in public why that person is not needed or is not doing the minimum satisfactory job.
Right, I agree. Now we can segue.
What do you have
there?
Yeah, Michigan Education's proposals, a very good article in Dearborn.patch.com yesterday, 11/29. What you need to know about Michigan's education reform proposals. Again, this lame duck session has many that have been introduced. And here's what's on the table. This is what's proposed now. House Bill 6004 and Senate Bill 1351. These bills require a survey of all public school buildings and empower the State Educational Achievement Authority. There is such a thing. Mm-hmm. EAA, to make decisions about how to use vacant buildings currently under the control of local school districts. Wow. Talk about a power grab. That's the way I see that initially. What, the state is going to make a decision about the vacant buildings? And who's going to get them? So the Ten Eyck Administration Building is vacated at some point in the future because the Dearborn Board of Ed, which they haven't decided yet, but they may decide to move into the new City Hall here in Dearborn. then they don't have the say over that property and that land? What is going on here? What does the state want to do? Give it to the highest bidder from some other state? They want to publicize it and get some big, I don't know, corporate entity from out of state, or I don't know. They don't want the local district to have control over the property? I don't understand it. I'm probably misconstruing it.
Well, I think it doesn't make sense. Hey, if the new entity has money, maybe, you know, Tenek has a pool there.
I'm going to ask George Durant, who is this Educational Achievement Authority? It's capital E, capital A, capital A. Where did that come from? You know, I'm a conservative in the sense that I think local is always best. And why is the state of Michigan acting so dictatorial here? What do the Republicans have in mind? What's wrong with our local school districts indicating when a building is truly vacant and when it's able to be sold or used by some other entity? I don't understand those. Okay, moving on to House Bill 5923. None of these have been passed as laws, but they're under consideration. The bill would issue special designations for single-gender, online, and quote-unquote globally competitive schools, the latter of which, could recruit students from anywhere in the world. That's the online instruction proposal. And special designations means that, I don't know what. Single gender means it could be an all-boys school. Online, of course, we know what that is. You don't go into a class physically. You just get educated via your computer. And also globally competitive schools that might be able to educate people from other countries. For a while, Henry Ford Community College, we had an online class. It was called HFCC Sunrise School, and we had people from San Francisco and all around the country enrolled in that. Again, we changed directors. We changed approaches to online education. We stopped doing that. Actually, I think we were criticized, or somebody pointed out the legality, that you can't really do that. You can't really grab students from outside your district. That's not fair. At least it wasn't. But these things are changing. I think they already have changed.
University of Phoenix.
But that's a private operation.
True. Good
not
point.
Not a state-funded entity like Henry Ford Community College.
Yeah, good point.
Well, and the bill also lets employers sponsor public schools. And this is a controversial one, which means that somebody pointed out that CompuWare in Detroit could, if they got the license to run a school, which means they have to relate to a school or to a college or university, but if they could get a license and have a school in their buildings for their own employees, you might say daycare, kids bring their employees bring the kids to the corporate entity, to the corporate building, that's where the schools are for their kids. Their kids are right there in the same massive complex being educated, elementary, junior high, high school. Now, those, apparently the law, which, again, they're very long, and there's all kinds of ins and outs. These are just a summary, folks. But I tried to look at 300 pages of educational reform, 300 pages. And
you stopped after page 200, didn't you?
I could only glance at some of these things, but I saw that that these corporate entities are required, if they go ahead and want to run a school themselves at whatever level, not only to have the proper license or charter, if you will, but they have to allow students a certain percentage from the outside to come, that they must have, I think is it 20%, must be from outside their own corporation, must be from the neighborhood or whatever. I don't know. But it can't be just for themselves.
Even if it's a private company.
Right.
That's interesting.
Because they're licensed to the state, so they have to be open to other
you know
students what? Choosing to come to them. Like if they live nearby, maybe it's the closest school.
Right.
So you'd want to go to the corporation office, to the Walmart headquarters or something if you live closest to it, if you like the school. Again, these schools make schools very competitive, and, of course, that's very confusing, too. Who has the best school? Who's licensed the best? Who has the right standards? Very, very confusing. I'm not against any of these proposals. And the big one is the Michigan Public Education Finance Act, that we want to talk about next. Go ahead, Dennis. You had a comment.
Well, I just wanted to say you had brought up the term special designation earlier. Mm-hmm. Are these all completely general study schools? In other words, are they, for lack of a better term, college prep? Or are some of them very specialized?
Online school could just be for English instruction if they wanted to do it that way.
That's probably what they had. Right. Okay.
So, we're waiting to see. And the public, the Michigan Public Education Finance Act is the big proposal, although that's the 300 pages. 302. I forgot the extra two. It would replace our current School Aid Act of 1979. So talk about a sweeping change.
Yeah, it's about time.
Talking about a radical change, yes, there's all kinds of problems, and I think it's better to make it cleaner and leaner rather than tweaking all what we had for how many years is that? 33 years.
Right.
The draft measure, which is out there, and you can read online if you want to, go to Michigan.gov and look it up. The Michigan Public Education Finance Act allows students to choose, the basic principle is choose which district they attend, permits per pupil funding split so students can attend more than one district at a time. They can be going to Dearborn High School for two classes and then choose three or four or five other classes online only, and the money to the Dearborn Public Schools would be reduced.
Right.
By three-fifths for that student.
So what would happen? What you're doing is you're creating competition, obviously.
Yes.
Standards would go higher, wouldn't you? Wouldn't that?
But the amounts of money coming into the Dearborn District will diminish.
If they don't.
Rapidly.
If they don't recruit, because there's no better word for it, if they don't recruit enough people.
I think a few lazy students who again, they have to be highly motivated or they will fail in their online instruction.
Automatically.
I mean, online instruction is not for everyone.
No, it gives you enough rope to hang yourself.
You have to be at the right entry level for the level of instruction of the program. But you got to pay attention. You got to do work every day. Even
discipline.
Here at HFCC, we tell you, "So, I got a choice of either going to class for this English class or doing it online. Same credit, the same sort of requirements." Well, they find out, and we try to tell them in advance.
Yeah.
They're actually working more hours a day, working harder through their computer.
Right.
There is the real world component. They have to send their papers online in. Teachers grade them, put comments on them, and email them back.
Sure.
It's all electronic. But they find out that they're working harder in order to achieve what they would in the classroom.
And if you're not self-motivated, you tend to put things off.
Because there's nobody at home to say, you got to turn the computer on now. You got it, maybe your parent, but or significant other. Say, don't you have to do that? Yeah, if you don't keep up with it on a daily basis, the online instruction, and if you're not self-motivated, as you pointed out, you're going to go down in flames. So it's not an easy way out.
No.
There's no work involved. You are saving the transportation issue of going in. But you're also losing out on the interaction, the interactivity that's possible, immediately possible, by being in a living classroom with a living teacher. Sure, online you can send emails, but there's always a delayed response. It's not that immediate. And plus, you don't get the involvement of your peer group also taking that class. Yes, there's chat rooms. There's ways to do that online. But you find out it's taken you a lot more time. And you need that personal motivation to succeed with online. So I think this will all shake out eventually, but it's a radical proposal, the Michigan Public Education Finance Act. And what do people say about it? Well, in Dearborn, I know Amy Blackburn went on, I don't think I have a quote in front of me here, by saying it's going to be a disaster.
That's what she
said. If this Michigan Public Education Finance Act, because she expected a lot of students to opt out for charter or private or whatever, and they're just going to lose bundles of money.
According to this, and this is the follow-up we were talking about, and I'll ask you a really good question in just a second, but this says that right now there is a program called the School of Choice. Mm-hmm. It's a state-run program.
Yes, yes.
Okay, do you remember 2010, around this time, we were having a conversation about schools and reform, and the reason why was because they were talking about mid-year cuts. And I know we talk about it extensively on the show and how it really does, it's difficult. It's difficult for the teachers, it's difficult for the students, difficult for families. What they're doing now is it's happening again.
Yeah, they can't finance anything.
They can't finance anything. And there's a $4.4 million mid-year shortfall. Mm-hmm. And the things they're using, the comprehensive plan, this whole plan includes layoffs. Although it is stated here by Superintendent Brian Winston, that he thinks it'll likely be around 20 employees. So there will be layoffs in mid-year. I don't know if you remember 2 years ago when this happened, they did hire some of the people back. They had more money than they expected, so they laid people off, and then they were able to hire them back. But they're also going to introduce the State School of Choice program, and what that means is that it'll allow the city to enroll a minimal number of students that live outside of Dearborn. And then also it will have extracting money from this district's fund balance. And they're going to create a six-month instead of a 12-month projection to allow for the resolution of a legal fight regarding teacher pension contributions.
Yeah, well, that's from our local school district situation. And supposedly Winston is going to talk about where he's going to cut $3 to $5 million in January.
Yeah.
On top of it.
He's still deciding.
Yeah.
But the obvious thing, everybody said, oh, employees. And they said, no, it looks like around 20. He says, not engraved in stone, but 20. What did you say now when I said the legal fight regarding teacher pension contributions? That's a completely in a Dearborn level, isn't it? Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think we've scared you enough with education news, but this is vitally important, and that's why we want to get, when the lame duck session does finish in a week or so, we want to get George Durrani's spin on exactly what happened. Obviously, whatever comes out of the House committee has to go to the House floor, be voted on, has to be approved in similar way by the Senate, a Senate bill, and then, of course, signed by the governor. And so we don't know if all that will happen in the next week or so. But again, Republicans in the majority with a Republican governor, they are able to do amazing things and surprising things and maybe things that are just completely inappropriate, but they have the power to do that. And so it's always a little bit scary when you look at a lame duck session and the majority is controlled by one party, whichever it is. We have that important announcement about the Goodfellas. Let's talk about the Goodfellas. We do not have the Pioneer Club around anymore. They would sell a special edition of the Times Herald on the street corners to raise money for local Christmases. That ended after 90 years, but we still have the Goodfellas, Dearborn Goodfellas, and give us the story, Dennis.
Well, as they do every year, they're going to take to the streets the first week of December, which is next week, to ensure that there is, quote, this is their slogan, no Dearborn child is without a Christmas.
I think it's tomorrow only.
Really? It says
maybe it starts for
hundreds of
tomorrow,
Goodfellas and community partners take to the streets in this first week in December.
Okay. Well, look for them the whole week, but definitely it starts tomorrow, and they're looking for volunteers.